Have you ever wondered what event leaders are doing right now to pack their rooms and convert attendees into high-ticket clients? Welcome to the High Profit Event Show, the podcast for experts who want to maximize profits and impact through live events. I'm Rudy Rodriguez, and each week I interview industry leaders to share what's working right now when it comes to filling your events, engaging your audience, and getting clients to enroll into your high-ticket programs. So stick around and be sure to hit that subscribe button. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on which time zone you're in. Welcome to today's episode of our show. We have a special guest with us, Mr. Richard Miller. Welcome, sir, to the show.
Thank you, man. It's good to be here.
Most definitely, man. It's a pleasure and honor to reconnect with you after a few years. It's interesting how the event space works, small world, to make friends along the way. We were reintroduced recently by another mutual friend, and we realized we have actually quite a bit in common, quite a bit of a background in common, including a gentleman that you're dear friends and worked with, Evan Pagan. I know you had a big background in supporting him back in his Double Your Dating brand expansion with a lot of live events and tons of other very reputable, well-known leaders in our industry. In fact, a little background about Richard, and then we're going to jump into his over 25 years of experience supporting live events, which is going to be a really value action-packed episode and capturing some of those important lessons learned. So Richard, you've been in the audiovisual industry since 1997. That's a long time, almost 30 years. And you've toured the United States, Canada, with some big trainers in the real estate industry, as well as other industries. And simply put, you've done, at this point, probably close to 1,000 seminars that you've supported, maybe over at this point. And you went on to start your own company, which you now run. And you also are in the process of creating a virtual event studio in Phoenix, Arizona, which is really cool. I'm really excited to hear more about. But yeah, since 2010, you've been running your company, Simplified Seminars, and you're rocking it, man. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into our interview here because I want to know, and our guests do too. So Richard, in your over 25 years of experience leading seminars in the back of the room, I imagine you've seen a lot of different situations, a lot of different probably wins, but also more importantly, mistakes that were made or fumbles and opportunities for development and improvement. And so I'm really going to want to focus more on that. What are some of the common mistakes that you've seen event leaders make that's held them back from having the best possible results when it comes to getting people to their event, maintaining engagement? You and I were talking in the group saying that on any given time, about 30% of an audience is checked out. And ultimately, how do we continue the relationship with them? How do we enroll them in an ongoing program so that they can get the coaching, the reinforcement that they need to make the change and keep the change? So I'd love to hear from you, brother. What are some of the top 3 to 5 mistakes, common mistakes that you've seen over the years that event leaders make and how to avoid them?
Yeah, I think the first one is not getting the proper support going into your event. I have worked with people who have done some small little events that have grown fast. I had worked with one guy that had about 50 people at his first event, and then it went pretty smooth because it was a small event. And then the next event, we had 400 people. It was in Las Vegas, and he thought it was a good idea to do his own event planning. And we ran into a lot of technical issues as a result of that. Not having a proper and event planner, there are a lot of different things that could happen along the way. And even just recently, a very high level client of mine who will remain nameless, very high level, like everybody who would listen to this would know this guy. But again, he has a new event planner working for him. And they had a small little like 40 person mastermind. And they had contacted me about it. And this new young event planner did not get a 24-hour hold on the room, which meant that they had to break down the room at 5 o'clock, get out of there, and then come back in at 1 o'clock in the morning and then set everything up again. And I was like, there's no way this happened. There's no way that this guy, right, at this level, but she was a very inexperienced event planner. She had done some weddings and things, and one of her friends worked for the company, and they're like, we'll hire this person. So it's important not only to have an event planner, but have an experienced event planner in the event space, not the wedding space, but the actual event space. And that not only for things like scheduling 24-hour holds on ballrooms, which really makes, if you're for a multi-day event, if your AV team has to basically break everything down at 5 o'clock because they've got a wedding in there, a reception or a retirement party, and then come back in at 1 o'clock in the morning, it gets very expensive. But also there's more potential for problems. If you've got a team coming in overnight versus during the day, So things might not get set up completely right. Shots might not look right. Things, not to mention the fact that, like, I've got so many stories of somebody in banquets, like the coffee's out and during a break. And so the banquet person asks, we want more coffee, thinking that the person standing at the coffee is part of the staff. Oh yeah, bring more coffee. And now they've got an extra $1,000 bill because the person didn't ask the right person, didn't know. I mean, there's just, it's really important to have proper support. And it's funny how, like I said, even people that you would think, oh, that person's got it, they think, well, I don't really need that. But there are just so many little junctures and little points where things can go awry, technically and financially, not even to mention the fact of negotiations. There's lots of things that happen during the events with internets and power drops of things that a proper event planner can negotiate some of those things, and knows what those limits are versus somebody coming in. It's like, well, that's what you got to pay. Not necessarily. The other thing I would say is having, I just did an event for a client that had 400 people at his event, and he's done multiple events, but he didn't have an MC, and he was running, you know, important MCs are, he was running around doing like three different things, and you could tell he was frazzled because he didn't have the proper support so he could kind of go recharge and focus on his content and do what he needed to do. So he was, and so people, I don't think they realize sometimes how important it is to have a person in that position so they can kind of just recharge and focus on the topic at hand, which is teach the content, to engage, to connect, to enroll them in the community. And those are just some basic low-hanging fruit things. I think the other thing that I see a lot is, as we, like at any given time, I being at the back of the room, you can look around the room and you can see how many people are unengaged, right? They're just on their phone. I've heard like 30%. I think it could be more at points. I think knowing that and having the awareness kind of built into your process where you kind of shake the tree a little bit to wake people up. One thing you could do is, and I was working back in the late 90s, we were kind of ahead of the game, but like Joe Stump, I was working with one of the largest trainers of real estate agents in the world at that time. He would tell people, he'd stop kind of in the middle. He'd look at the room and he'd stop sometimes in odd positions and say, turn to the person next to you and tell me what you just learned. And you've heard that one, right? And what that does, that shakes, oh, I got to pay attention now. I got to pay attention. So now you've essentially broken the pattern. And now you've got to turn to the person next to you and tell you what you just learned. And now if you weren't paying attention, now it's an embarrassment. So now you're like, oh, I've got to pay attention because that's probably going to happen again. So I should probably be a little more tuned in. That's a great one. The other thing that I like about that one is that it gives you a moment to recenter. If you're feeling like you're a little disconnected or maybe not, you're off script or something, it gives you a minute to kind of recenter, because you can have them talk for whatever, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then go talk to your staff, get yourself kind of recalibrated and get back to it. Rudy, when we were traveling around the country, it was a machine. And Joe Stump understood the value of that distinction so much that we actually had a fitness trainer that traveled with us. We had a woman, Karen Reisner, and 4 or 5 times a day, he'd bring her up, and she was like an aerobics instructor. And we'd get her on stage and she'd have exercises that you could kind of do in your seat that were not just to keep the energy up, whether or not it's just having people stand up and clap their hands, keeping that energy up is very, very important in terms of engagement. So those are real important. And a lot of people don't use those. They're not aware of how many people are tuned out at any given time. Just looking here at my notes. The other thing that sometimes people do, go ahead.
Real quick, I just want to take a pause here because you shared so many nuggets and I want to recap what I'm hearing so far. And I'm sure there's more things are going to come to you here in a moment. One, as simple as and obvious as it sounds, having an event planner, you have all the unknowns that come when we try to figure it out on our own. And you gave an example that I've actually never heard before. I never heard the terminology of like somebody didn't have a 24-hour hold on a room.
Yeah.
And it will break down and set it up again the next day. And I can't even imagine the hassle that would have been through the event leader that day. I've never even heard that terminology before. Yeah. So perfect example of something that I didn't even know. I didn't know. Yeah. Some event planner already handled that.
Yeah.
Second thing I'm hearing you say is the importance of getting people engaged and even having intentional breaks and exercise throughout the event. Like actually having someone whose designated job is that. It's getting people in their bodies, energy up, engaged, focused. And you know, I was like, it's brilliant. I've seen that in events where they take the breaks and they move and they dance, but actually, yeah, having someone designated for that's a pretty cool concept. So thanks for sharing that. I know you have a lot more to share, so keep going. I just wanted to recap those couple things that I took away.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that is, it's a very counterintuitive thing, but when you think about it, I think it makes sense, is that I heard this from Eben, and I'll probably butcher the exact phrasing of it, but Eben told me years ago that he was having a conversation with Alex Mendozian. And Alex Mendozian said something to the effect of, the less you talk and the more they work, the more they learn, something to that effect. And so it speaks to the idea of, a lot of times in events, I think there's this conscious and unconscious desire to kind of almost overwhelm people with content at the hopes that they're going to be like, oh my God, there's so much stuff. I've got to take the next step with you to be part of your coaching. And while that's true in some cases, it's sometimes people are like, I just got overwhelmed. And now I'm actually in worse shape now than I was before, because you brought up so many things that now that I've got to think about. And now I didn't really have any time to digest how to deal with these problems, some of the solutions that are provided in the presentation. So it's, people think that we've got to stack this, we got to stack this, we got to stack this. But it's having like breaks, having a lot of exercise, like writing exercise breaks for people to take on the content for themselves. So if there's a, let's just say there's a section on, I'm making this up, on hiring, right? There's a, giving somebody 5 minutes towards the end of that particular presentation to just to write their own notes. And that does a couple of things. Number one, it allows them to digest what you've just said. Number two, like they're physically engaging with your content. They are writing down your content now, that they're making your content theirs. And there's some commitment and consistency aspect of like, now I've got some tasks to do. And so it gives you a break and allows them to engage with your content more. And people, I think sometimes people think, well, if they've got a game plan, they're not going to take action. That's not the case. Like, I think one of the things I've learned, Rudy, over the years is that do the right thing and by the people in the room, and your audience will self-select. A person that was going to do it on their own, because you gave them a few extra writing exercise opportunities to write things down, you know, that they're gonna work with you regardless. Like, you doing that isn't going to make them not work with you, if that makes any sense. And that's I think there's a lot of fear that a lot of people have. It's your audience is going to self-select based on the quality of your content, your personality, your sincerity. People will self-select and they're going to gravitate towards you as a result of that. And I think, like I said, a lot of people will just try to we got to stuff it with content. And it hurts them, I think, in the long run, because you want people to, whether or not they do business with you or not, past the seminar, you want them to get as much value as possible and hopefully come back, right? Again, I've seen people come to seminars a couple of different times over the years, because I've worked in everything from dating to business advice to relationship advice to like hire, I mean, everything you can imagine. And sometimes you see people two or three times and it's the second or third time that they actually decide to take the journey with you. Sometimes the first one, not the right time. But again, building in the assumption that give them the time to digest the content, building those into is real important, I think.
Yeah, Richard, one of the things I'm hearing you say around giving them time to digest the content is this idea of letting them do the work, getting as much time as possible to do the work and let them get value and self-select based off of how them and their own work ethic or what they want to, the value they want to create for themselves. There was a quote by T. Harv Eckert that comes to mind when you were saying that, and it goes, the more you have them do, the more they like you.
Wow.
The more you have them do, the more they like you. Not being shy of like having them do things. That's why they're there. They're there to get the result or the outcome, and they're willing to do, most people would be willing to do the work that you ask them to do, not to be gun shy about having them do some of the hard stuff. Because the more you ask, the more you have them do, the more they're going to like you. And for those people who are students of influence and psychology, we know that in Cialdini's book, the sixth influence, he talks about six, looking to get influence. One of the key six is likability, right? So the more you have them do, the more they like you. And the more they like you, the more likely you are to be able to influence them to continue their journey with you beyond the event, right? Which brings us, I think, to the next point I would love. And honestly, I think this is like the, outside of like promoting the event, I feel like this is the next top of mind challenge or problem that event leaders face is like, okay, I'm at my events. I have people there. I have engagement. They've done a lot of work. Now, how do I build the bridge to enroll them in an ongoing program, whether it's a coaching program, a retreat, a mastermind offering of some sort? What have you seen as like the most common mistake or maybe a couple of mistakes that event leaders have made when it's come to enrolling people into their programs beyond their events?
Absolutely. I want to just speak to the Cialdini quote, because I heard another variation of it. I was in an event and he spoke about that because he redid influence. And he said that it's important that they like you, but it's also very important that they think you like them. And I thought that was fab. That was like fascinating. Anyways, I just had to, because it's one of those things where it's like he keeps going down the rabbit hole and gets more distinctions. As far as the closing is concerned or the enrollment process, I think most people these days know in a 3-day event, like before lunch on the second day is when people do the pitch. It's just, that's the thing. I think that it's funny, I don't know where, you know, where people are at in the process, but I think the most valuable asset you can have in terms of enrollment is a success panel, because there's a lot of things that can be faked. You could have a whole P.T. Barnum show. You could roll up to the front in a Lamborghini that you rented. You could have pictures of a mansion that's an Airbnb you rented for the weekend. You can, whatever. You could have a bunch of AI write content for you, and no one would ever have a sense of whether or not you're legit. But when you've got that success panel there and you've got people that are up there, you can't, that's proof that can't be faked. And that is probably the most important thing. When, even if you don't have like 8 or 10 people, even if you got 2 or 3 people that can go up there just for a few minutes and speak about the transformation they've had, even if it's recorded or they're on Zoom or whatever, hey, so-and-so couldn't be here, but they wanted to share their experience. That proof is so important. And a lot of people that get started, they just do their pitch, but they haven't thought that through. They haven't had the coaching. They don't know how important that is. And that's just such an important part of that. The other thing is having an opportunity for the people that are interested that are signing up right then and there for either like a lunch reception. Hey, for those of you that are interested, but in learning more, we're going to have a little lunch reception either in the same room or another room to answer questions. Very important little touch points there, I think, when it comes to the enrollment process. The other thing I would say, and I put this in my notes, is when we were doing these, what was called the main event, I worked with Joe Stump for 10 years all over the US and Canada. We had an incredible closing ratio at the events. We had assistants and different people come, sometimes spouses, but we had what we called our eligible people for the coaching program. We were doing 40-50% of the people in the room, closing them at the coaching program. But then after the program, we had a sales team that would basically call these people up and do a business development consultation. Like, hey, let's just see where you're at with things. We want to continue to give value to this and basically go through where they're at with their marketing, where they're at with their kind of their during unit, how are operations, how's your after sales follow up? And they would get another 5 to 10% of the people sign up from these business development consultations. And unless it's a bigger operation, Rudy, almost nobody's doing that these days. These smaller clients that I've got that have 200 or 300 people, they don't have anybody doing after sales follow-up with that. And there's so much low hanging fruit on that. And of course there's companies you can hire to do that. They go through your process and they take a piece of it, but there's a lot of value in doing that. And so many people are not doing that. And I think that they think it's, well, I don't have a team. I don't really have a big team to do that. But as you know, there are companies out there that will do that for you. And a lot of the bigger players use those companies for years. One of my clients had, for years, he had like 25 people working for him here locally in Phoenix. And then it had 300 people in an office in Utah, that whereas all of his salespeople, all of his coaches. And so those organizations are still available. And I think people, if you've got a few hundred people come to the program, set that up. Make sure that's set up to where you can follow up with these people week or two after, because now they're back in it. They're back in their life. They're like, oh, I didn't sign up. They're dealing with the BS from this and that. And just reaching out and saying, hey, we've got a free business development consultation or whatever free. We just want to see how you're doing. And we want to make sure you're getting as much value from the program as possible. That just 60-minute, 90-minute thing yields such tremendous results. That ended up being like another $1 million in profit in Joe's pocket a year. Maybe not quite that, but pretty close. And it's one of those things a lot of people don't think about. So, and again, I think that,
Richard, I want to make a point there because
yeah, of course,
you made some really important points here, and I want to make sure that you recount. One common mistake, not having a success panel, going right into the offer without a success panel, which panel is social proof, which is also one of the 6
weapons. Yes.
A little bit influenced by Cialdini.
Yeah.
So great emphasis on that. Yeah. The other one is not having a team to support beyond the event. And you mentioned an example of $1 million of additional profit that was picked up from that effort. And we've discussed this in detail, but I also am a founder in an agency that does that specifically.
Oh, I didn't know that, Rudy. I didn't know that. That's great.
You set it up perfectly. So thank you for not even knowing you realized that. And that's exactly what we do, is we make sure that those opportunities are not missed. There's so much, like you said, $1 million of profit that could have been missed there.
Yeah.
And you got to have a human being that can be able to help navigate the big decision. So appreciate you setting that up.
I didn't even know that, man. And I'm so glad because now I'll send people to you.
It wasn't blood flap per se, but I want to talk more about you specifically. So we're coming up on our answer. So I would love to have you share a little bit more about what you're creating now for event leaders. You're giving me some really cool behind the scenes stuff that you're working on. I'd love to hear about it. You don't mind sharing.
Would love to, man. Long story short, during COVID, we did a lot of virtual events for people, and we do some like hybrid events for smaller seminars. And then I have a studio where we would host remotely. We would host virtual events. We did this since for Ebon and whatnot. And coming out of COVID, I thought, well, that's over. We're still doing some hybrid stuff. But what I found, Rudy, was that kind of coming out of last year, a lot of my clients were like, they had spent so much money in live events that they were like, I kind of had the sense, okay, this ain't going to happen. This isn't going to be the same next year. And sure enough, I've got four clients this year that basically they're not doing live events. Call them up like, everything okay? No, we're just not going back because the hotels have doubled. Audiovisual has almost doubled. My labor costs, my technicians, I'm paying them almost double what I was paying them pre-COVID. And so everything's went up so much. And so I had one client last year that I just saw at another event, and he told me that he had to pay the hotel $600,000, $300,000 of which was attrition, because in our earlier conversations, he was expecting 900 people. Oh, we're going to have 900 people. He had 400. So he had all those rooms. And so I was like, oh man, this is interesting. So I made a decision earlier this year, when I was like, I should probably take my studio and turn it into a virtual event space, like permanently, like just commit rather than just, I had green screen, I had different things. I'm like, no, I'm going to totally focus on virtual events because hotels don't show any sign of slowing down in prices. And my technicians don't want to make less money. My gear costs have kind of stabilized, but again, they're up. And so if you just look at the pure mechanics of it, certainly it's great to have 200, 300, 400, 500 people in a room to be face-to-face to them with them. But that's hundreds of thousands of dollars for many people. That's $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 between the hotel room, the ballroom, the food and beverage, AV. And so if you just look at the math, so let's just say one coaching spot is $25,000. Like, how many coaching spots do you have to sell to basically pay for $250,000 worth of hotel? So I thought to myself, let me create an environment where people can come in into a premium space that's well lit, very nice set, premium cameras, monitors everywhere. We got like four or five monitors just for Zoom galleries. We've got a monitor for pins. We've got notes. We've got timer. We've got a chat. Got all these things. And then I've got a whole team in the back to deal with whatever's needed. And I thought people will come in, and I thought that for the right client, this could be a dream come true, because there's not a lot of places like this in the country that exist. There's a couple of them, but they're kind of few and far between. And some of them are open to the public, but a couple of them are private. You don't even get access to, couldn't come rent it unless you were part of their kind of, at least their inner circle, their periphery. And so I've been working on that for the last 6 months, and I'm basically going to be opening to the public in October. We've got a few more things to put in place. It's funny, I was just in Europe for a month and I got a call from a client last minute, and he said, is your place open? I'm like, not quite, but I'm like, what do you got going on? He goes, we have a client flying in from Denver on a private jet, and our studio is double booked. They're in Scottsdale. And can we make it happen? I'm like, well, here's where we're at. We can make it happen. And so this was on a Thursday. So I had my team come in on Friday, run some lines, set some other computers and things up. And then they did a very successful event on Saturday. And so that was cool to be out of the country and basically have it go real well. And so the other thing is, we're going to be getting triple redundant internet in there as well. We'll have three different ISPs. So if something happens with one, we've got two backups. And that's also, I don't think that exists anywhere. So I'm real excited about it. And I think it's going to be, I think it'll be a great resource for people that have a good audience of people that they want to continue to communicate with, but don't want to drop $250,000, $500,000 at a hotel. They want to, they can drop a fraction of that, come into my space, be fully supported in a premium environment, have a great looking video, product come out of it, and hopefully enroll and do well for actual results. So that's my vision for that. It's my goal for that. I'm real excited about it. So.
Outstanding, man. That sounds excellent. And I want to emphasize the importance and the value of having that type of setup. As several of our partners on our sales agencies, they run live events, both in person and virtual. And it makes, I've seen all the different YouTube people who set up like a great studio setup.
Yeah.
And people who just do it on their own in the comfort of their home.
And pros
both of it. I would definitely say, based on my experience, that the juice is definitely worth the squeeze when it comes to investing a little bit more to make sure that you don't have to get bogged down with technical issues and make sure that the quality of the event production is potentially just as good virtually as in person. When you have a professional team and professional studio around you, it can be quite excellent, especially if people are having like over 50 participants and being able to engage them effectively. It goes a long ways.
It does. And the other thing is that I set the space up. I have some scenic in there. I have a 20-foot by 10-foot scenic. And it's the same type of scenic that I use for some of my clients in my live events. So when they're in front of it, it's like they're on stage. And so something, an aspect of their consciousness comes alive in that space. So they're like on stage, right? So the monitors, and so they're able to, I think, conjure or basically allow an aspect of their being to come alive in that space that they're not going to have at their house, in their kitchen or whatever. And I think that's important, that charisma, that energy, that aliveness is, I wanted to foster that. Just like you're on stage. It's just that these people are on monitors versus in the crowd in front. And I think that's important and as well. So I appreciate you saying that. And yeah, I think it does make a difference, man. I really do.
Absolutely. And for those event leaders who are listening to this episode and want to connect with you and learn more about potentially using, acquiring some of your services, what would be the best way for them to discover more?
My website for my event services is Titan Event Technologies, but I got a short URL. It's TetPros, TETPROS.com. My email is richard@tetpros.com. I'm building a website for the virtual event space. It's not done yet. I'm going back and forth on two different URLs that I have, probably Mission Control Studios. But again, just contact me through TetPros and we can talk about live events or virtual events or either one of those things. So that'd be great.
Awesome. We'll be sure to include the links in the show notes here for this podcast. So if you're tuning in, just scroll down to the show notes and you can grab the email and the website there and reach out to Richard and definitely have a consultation and leverage as 25 years of experience. And in fact, on this interview, I know that we had like 10 lessons that you learned. We probably only covered maybe 5 on this interview just for the sake of time. I just encourage you to reach out to Richard Miller, go to his website, send him an email, set up a consultation to discover how you might benefit from his experience and his service, especially his virtual studio.
Yeah.
It's been great interviewing you here today, brother. Any final comments or words you'd like to leave our audience with?
I think that last thing I'll say is I think that I've seen a lot of people that do live events and they wait years to do it. It's because something in them tells them they're not ready yet. They're whatever. And I would just say that if you're good at what you do and take the plunge. People will self-select. You're not there to be all things to all people. And the sooner you jump into it, the more people you can help, the faster you're going to kind of get to the direction that you want to go. And I saw this, got connected to this gentleman recently that I knew back in the days working with Evan. And he was just like a dating coach. And I just saw that he has 800,000 followers on Instagram, and he's got an audience of 2 million people. He's teaching like spiritual stuff. And I was blown away, absolutely blown away. But when we first started with him, I was on the phone with him a few times working with content with him because he wanted to do an interview with Evan. And I was like, you never know where people are going to go. And it was just so beautiful to see him blossom. And I would just encourage people, if you're on the fence, just do it. You don't have to go crazy, but just share your gifts, share your light, and your audience and your group, your community, they'll self-select. So that's what I would say.
Awesome, brother. Thank you for those final words. Much obliged to you, sir. And with that being said, we're going to go ahead and declare this episode a wrap. And go ahead and go to Richard's website, check it out. And Richard, thanks again for being a guest with us.
Thanks, Beth. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the High Profit Event Show. If you are a seminar leader or thought leader or event service provider who has led or supported profitable, successful events to over 100 people, and you've been effective at enrollment into your high-end coaching, education, mastermind type programs, we're looking for guests. Love to have you on the show. You can go to our website, virtualeventsalesteam.com, click on the podcast tab and submit an application to be on our show. Also, if you found the show to be valuable, share it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Take a moment, please leave a review, and also subscribe if you haven't already. And lastly, if you have an upcoming event, whether it be virtual or in person, and you'd like to have a conversation about how to fill your coaching, education, mastermind programs fast using events, you're welcome to book a complimentary 15-minute consult with either myself or a member of my team on our website, virtualeventsalesteam.com. Again, this is Rudy Rodriguez, and congratulations on investing the time to listen to this episode. I hope it's been valuable. Have a great day.